Hi, this is Kevin Dubetter, Extension Agriculture Economist at Kansas State University. And this video that you're watching is a user's guide or user's documentation for the spreadsheet KSU Land Buy Excel spreadsheet developed by myself and Terry Kastens. What I'm going to do in this short video is give a little bit of a brief introduction as to the inputs required and a little bit of an interpretation of some of the outputs. The spreadsheet is a fairly simple spreadsheet. There's three tabs: intro, KSU land buy, and guidelines. One of the first things we'd want to point out is in the spreadsheet, anytime you're using this, we encourage you to go out to our website, agmanager.info, and make sure that the version you're working with is the most up-to-date. If we make changes, we repost it to the website, and the version number reflects the date as to when it was last updated. The other thing that's in this first tab has some very short little explanation as to some things. Points out that the blue numbers are inputs, points out that there's a paper valuing and buying farmland that provides a lot of very detailed explanation and derivations of some of the formulas used in the spreadsheet. Also points out that any cells that have red diamonds in them basically are mouse overs. It gives a little bit more information or some brief documentation as to what's expected. And then finally, what we have on this tab is our contact information. Should you have any questions, you can drop us an email or give us a call. The other tab on here, guidelines, is a lot of historical information for 39 different states that we've been tracking data on related to after property tax rents as a percent of value, or rent to value, rental rates, property tax rates, growth rates on land values, growth rates on ag portions. The information in this tab is all just background information that you might want to look at for some guidance in some of the inputs that will be required. For the most part, the entire spreadsheet that you really are going to focus on is in this tab called KSU Land Buy. And as mentioned earlier, the blue shaded cells are inputs. All other values are calculated. What I'm going to do now is go through a very simple little example. I'm going to just walk through some of the inputs and also how you might interpret some of the output. The first input we need is we just enter the state. Obviously, the state is not used or relevant for any calculations. It helps just give us some reference, and that way if you print it off, you can remember what you were looking at. But it does point out in this little mouse over that there is some guidelines that you can use in the guidelines tab. The next cell I'm going to enter in is a short little description of the land type or classification. You'll notice that we can actually put in three different land classifications. In this example, I'm looking at a tract of land that's 160 acres, 120 acres of its cropland, 35 acres is pasture, 5 acres is waste. Instead, I might be looking at a tract of land where I want to look at three different crop classifications, where maybe I've got some better quality land, some average land, and some poor quality land. This allows me to kind of calculate a value for each of the land classifications, but then also get an average for the tract itself. Okay, as I already mentioned, we then put in the acres for each classification. Pretty straightforward. The next line is the market price of the land. And sometimes people might say, well, if I know what the market price is, then why am I bothering with the spreadsheet? The point of this is we're trying to analyze if the market price I might be expected to pay is going to give me a kind of rate of return that I'm happy with. So what we're asking for here is your best guess of what you think the land would sell for, and then compared to other land in the area. The next line is the purchase price, and for the most part, purchase price and market price should be the same number. But by having a separate input here, this allows us to look at what's the expected rate of return maybe if I get a good buy, if I buy it below market price. Likewise, what happens if I pay a premium for this land? What does that do to my rate of return? We know that land is a long-term investment, and it will have capital gains, and therefore, whatever I pay for it today, we believe that the land will be worth something different in the future because of growth rates or inflation. And in this case, the capital gains, the growth rates, they apply to the market price of the land, not the purchase price. Therefore, if I pay something way above the market, land is only going to grow based on the market price, not the higher price that I actually paid for it. The next line is today's expected net cash rent for the land parcel. Net being if the landlord has some costs associated with maintaining or managing that land, they would subtract those out. We do not exclude property taxes. They're going to come in on the next line. But for example, on pasture land in Kansas, landlords might have to pay a certain amount for fences or noxious weed control. Those would come in as a net here, so the cash rent should be net of any of those expenses. The next line is property taxes, and they're going to vary from state to state. In Kansas, they have averaged about 0.37% of the market value. So in this particular case, rather than entering a number, I actually have a formula entered in that says B6, the market price of land, times 0.0037. That way, when I use this tomorrow with a different example, I automatically estimate what the taxes are. Obviously, on an individual tract of land, you know what the taxes are. So rather than entering it as a formula, you would just enter in a number. The next line is non-ag rents. And those are things like lease hunting. They're going to be income that I expect to generate that is not the cash rent that's in the farming. In this case, I've got zero because I say I'm looking at buying some land, I'm going to rent it out, but there is no other income out there. But we've allowed that to be a secondary or another input. The next line is the useful life or the time horizon. We generally recommend something like about 30 years. That's kind of how long the typical piece of land is owned. I can put in up to 100 years. So thinking of someone that plans on owning this across multiple generations, 40, 50, 60 years is not a problem. We generally don't recommend that people are using this spreadsheet looking at very, very short time horizons. All the formulas are correct, but we know that that's not the typical way most people are looking at using this spreadsheet. The next line is the income tax rate on the last dollar of taxable income, or in other words, the marginal tax rate that we expect to be paying over the life of or the horizon that we're looking at. And what I've got entered in here is 0.15 plus 0.28. So the point of that is this should reflect both the state income tax rate and the federal income tax rate. Okay, so it's going to be just the marginal tax rate on the next dollar of income I earn, reflecting both federal and state taxes. The next input is the capital tax rate expected at the time the land is going to be sold in the future. We don't know what that will be in 30 years from now. It might be zero, it might be 50%. What we plugged in is kind of what we think it would be roughly at today's current policy, but this is very much a projection. What we can also see if we play around a little bit, changing this from 15 to 25, 30 won't have a huge impact on our returns, so long as that time horizon is relatively long, in this case 30 years. The next input, we suggest to put in the prevailing interest rate on a T-year or 30-year fixed rate land loan. Basically, this is going to be the discount rate that's used in the net present value calculations. And as I said, we suggest using a fixed rate on a long-term land loan. The next line is the percent of purchase price that's financed. Just point out this only affects the return on equity. It obviously does not impact the calculated maximum bid price or the rate of return on assets. The other thing I just might point out right here is that notice that the time horizon, the tax rates, the interest rate, the amount financed, they're all black values for the second and third columns over. In other words, it says whatever I put in for one will be used for all three land classifications or land types. That's not true for land value, tax rates, rents, and things of that nature. The next three rows are growth rates. This first one is the expected growth rate on ag rents and land values over the next 30 years in this example, only pertaining to the ag value. This is where you might go over to the guidelines tab and look in column G. So as an example, if I come over here, I can see that From 1951 to 2008, the average ag growth rate in Kansas was 3.71%. And I can see what those long-term growth rates have been for some of the different states. In this example I'm using, 2.93%, I'm using something a little more conservative than it was over the last 50 plus years. I believe this is kind of more in tune with about a 30-year average. The next row down is the growth rate on the non-ag rent. Now in this case, it really doesn't apply because my non-ag growth or my non-ag rent up above was entered in at zero. So I could put in whatever number I want here and it will have no effect on the results given that there is no non-ag rent entered. Finally, we put in the value for the growth rate on total land value, ag and non-ag, over the next 30 years, or T years in this case. And this says C column I for historical averages. So if we go over there, we can see that in Kansas, even though the ag growth has been 3.7, the total land value growth over that time has been over 4.5%. And that just shows that historically, for most all states, land values themselves have grown faster than cash rents have. In other words, the ag portion of agricultural land values is not keeping up with the land values themselves. Okay, then the last line here is a calculated value that says this is the amount of non-ag growth rate on land. In other words, the total land is growing at 3.86%, the ag portion at 2.93%, so there's some growth that's due to something other than increases in cash rents. And then I would need to enter that same information for the other land classifications. In this example, I have $400 in for the purchase price of the land, or the market value, $400 for the purchase price, a rent of $14, kind of a property tax of $1.48. Once again, no non-ag rent. And you can see I've got a slightly lower growth rate on pasture rental rates. That's based on historical data in Kansas. It says pasture rents don't grow quite as fast as crop rents. But you can see that I've got the total land value actually growing at the same rate, which is what we've observed in Kansas, that pasture land values actually grow very similar to crop land values. Actually, in recent years, pasture land values have grown at a faster rate than crop land values. The 5 acres of waste, I basically said they have no value, no rental value, no price. So what's going to happen is what's calculated in the fourth column over is going to reflect a weighted average of 120 acres at one value, 35 acres at another, and then that 5 acres at zero. So that's all that's required for the inputs. Then after that, we have calculated values down in the box below. This first one is really just a intermediate calculation that's used in a number of the other ones. This is the after-tax interest rate on land loans. Basically, it's the 6.5% adjusted for the income tax rates that I've entered in. The next row down gives the after-tax rent on a per acre basis. It's taking that $45 rent, subtracting off the property tax or the real estate tax, as well as adjusting for income taxes. The next row down is the discounted value of all future after-tax ag rents. So what that would reflect is if I took my $45 an acre rent, paid my property taxes, paid income taxes, and then that grew at 2.93% over the next 30 years, added them all up to today's value, I would have $627. So one way of thinking about that is if somebody gave me this land and I had the right to rent it out for 30 years, and at the end of that 30 years, I basically had to give the land away, that says in today's dollar, the value of that land would be $627 per acre. The next row down is the same thing for the non-ag tax rents, but in this case it's zero because I had a $0 of non-ag rents entered. The next row, $3,271, says this is a projected land value in 30 years based on the market value of $1,050 per acre and then growing at that 3.86% per year. So that's the saying, this is what we would expect that land value might be worth 30 years from today. If I only factored in the ag portion of, or ag growth, this land would be worth about $2,500. But once again, we know that land values have been growing faster than what the ag rents have grown, and therefore we think this land would actually be worth $3,271. The next line down, $986, says this is what the discounted value of the land sale in 30 years would be after accounting for capital gains tax rate brought back to today's dollars. So once again, that $3,271 land value 30 years from now, after I pay my capital gains, after I bring all that back to today's dollars, it says this land would be worth $986. The next line says this is what it would be if it was growing only at the ag rent, the 2.93%. This next line, this PVL, or the present value of land purchase, oftentimes might also be referred to as the maximum bid. This would reflect adding up the present value of the discounted rents plus the present value of the future sale, and you get them and you say, this land, I could pay up to $1,600 for it. Now, if you paid $1,600 for this cropland, you rented it for $45, it grew at 6.5%, this says I would get exactly a 6.5% rate of return. Okay, so when we think of it, that's when we talk about maximum bid, that's saying if you pay more than this, you would actually have a negative net present value. The next two lines are ag market value percent implied by the non-ag rent and the growth. These are calculated values that kind of just allow you to kind of look at some of the historical guidelines. They're not used in any of the calculations. The next row down is the present value less the market price. So that just says, if I would have paid the $1,613, that's a present value, a positive present value of $563. Another way of looking at it is, anytime the present value is a positive number, that says I would expect I'm getting a rate of return higher than the discount rate. The next one is the same thing, it's the present value less the purchase price. In this case, our purchase price and market price are the same. It's really these last two rows that we encourage people to focus on the most: approximate pre-tax rate of return on assets and approximate pre-tax rate of return on equity. So in this case, on the crop land, you can see that if I paid $1,050, I could cash rent it for $45, land values grew at 3.86%, cash rents grew at 2.93%, I'm expecting to get just under a 10% rate of return on assets. Because interest was 6.5% and I borrowed some money, my approximate pre-tax rate of return on equity would actually be greater than that. Obviously, if my interest rate was greater than the 9.88, my rate of return on equity would be less than that. So as an example, if I change my percent of purchase price that's financed to zero, so in other words, I provided all my own money, you can see that my rate of return on assets and my rate of return on equity become the same number. Likewise, if somebody came in and said, what if you were somehow able to borrow 100%? Well, in that case, your rate of return on equity is undefined because you put in no equity, but your rate of return on assets is still at 9.88. So putting that back to 40%, you can see in this case, our rate of return is greater. Now, once again, if I had an interest rate at 12%, my rate of return on assets is not affected. My rate of return on equity is actually less than that. And in this case, you can see that the present value less the market price went negative because it says $1,050 is less than the value of the land, the present value of the land. So putting that back to 6.5%. The way we encourage people to look at this is give yourself kind of a targeted rate of return on assets or rate of return on equity. And then now I can start playing around with what's the purchase price. So as an example, if someone came in and said, I think for whatever reason I can get this land bought below market, so maybe I can pay $950 for the cropland, $300 for the pasture. When I do that, I can now get an expected rate of return on assets of 10.75%. My rate of return on equity, almost 13.6%. On the other hand, someone that comes in and says, hey, I really want this land, I'm willing to pay a premium for it because of location or whatever, so I'm going to pay $1,150 on this, and I'm going to pay $450 on the pasture. You can see when they do that, they've now driven their rate of return on assets down to 9%. Rate of return on equity about 10.77. So here's where we think this spreadsheet has a lot of power or potential. Someone says, I think I know kind of roughly where the market's at, and now I can start looking at paying above or below that, and what kind of rate of return do I expect I might get. So I'm just going to put these back to what I initially had. And so as an example, now if you were using this, what this really says is if I was going to out make an offer on this section of land, 160 acres, I'm going to make an offer of $875 per acre straight through. So that's $875 on every acre. And when I do that, I've got an expected rate of return of just under 10%. In our use of this spreadsheet, when we go back and maybe look at how the numbers compared at actual land sales, kind of crudely or anecdotally, what we would suggest is that using historical rates for or growth rates and tax, historical growth rates, current cash rental values, what we typically find is about half the time. If you target about a 9.5 to 10% return on assets, you probably get that land bought at those prices. But they're about half the time, it seems like land is going considerably higher. Now, that could be for a lot of reasons. It could be because the person you're bidding against has much different expectations. As an example, let's just say somebody said, I think land is going to grow at 4%. And I'll put 4 in both of these, also 4 on the pasture. Notice they're saying, hey, this gives me a rate of return of 10.54. If they are only targeting 9.5, they're going to pay a lot more than $1,050 and $400. So you can see that the spreadsheet helps us explain why some people might have considerably different bids than other people. Just changing some of those inputs back to where they were, this gives us back to our original case. So we think it's a fairly straightforward spreadsheet in terms of the inputs required. Mathematically, there's a lot of fairly intensive or formulas and calculations. If somebody wants to see exactly what all those formulas are, you can kind of look at them in the spreadsheet, or you can go to the paper, as I already mentioned. One other place in the spreadsheet, just to kind of show you that it's there, is if I scroll down, these are all calculated values. This just shows you how things are playing out. This is the property tax today, the rent today, less property tax, and then how it's growing over time. Here's the land value today, how it's growing over time. None of these are, all these values are used in the calculations. They're really nothing that the user has to focus on. So really what has to be focused on is this section up here of the inputs and then the section of the calculated outputs. And with that, I would just remind you that if you have questions, both mine and Terry's phone numbers and emails are on this front screen. We'd encourage you to drop us a line, drop us an email, or give us a call if you have any questions. And with that, we wish you all the best as you use this spreadsheet.